Coming up on this episode of Embracing Change with Lakrita Bowman and Jennifer Osborne.
She was like maybe 5 or 6, and she was like, "So why didn't you come and get me? I didn't think you liked me." And I was like, "Oh my God, I didn't like me. It had nothing to do with you."
Hello, Teresa.
Hello, hello, hello.
How are you doing?
I'm doing well, thank you.
Yeah, this is Teresa Taylor. Hello, everyone. We're going to be doing an interview with Teresa. Just to give you some backdrop on this, Teresa is a former participant and now living a great life. How did you get involved with Having the Courage to Change?
I came to Having the Courage to Change in 1998, and I remember that because my daughter was 1 and my first pass was going to be to host her birthday party. And she turned 1 year old, and I remember we were in the house on Kenny, and I just remember, like, I have to follow the rules, I have to follow all the rules so that I could get my pass at the end of the week. And Thursdays were long. I remember Thursdays were long days because we do, I guess, I'm not sure if I was working at or something at the time, but then at the evening we would have the Bible study with Geneva, and Geneva would pray over us and pray for us and give us a word, and that's how I got here.
Yeah. And so in that moment, going back to that one Thursday when your daughter was 1 year old and you knew with your the brokenness that you came to Having the Courage to Change with, not that that identified who you were, it was just what you were going through.
Mm-hmm.
You knew that there was a bigger picture, and at that moment on that Thursday evening, I always think that there's catapulting moments in our lives.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe that night was a catapulting, because all you knew is that I had a baby. She was 1 year old. I want to be present for her birthday, so I'll do whatever I need to do. And so when you think about that, what was that journey like, just making that decision of, I'll do whatever I have to do to get where I want to go?
Yeah, and another thing too, when with that night, that one, for that first Thursday, as I said, Geneva had prayed over me, and her word for me was love. And you know, at the time it was, okay, fine, I'll be loved, just let me get this pass and see my baby. But that stuck with me after, I mean, like 22 years. And your other quote, you'll never find the meaning or definition of life until you come back to the source.
Mm-hmm.
And the source for me, as I learned once I got 50, I mean, this stuff never, unfortunately, I didn't get it while I was here in the house. I got it just over time, over the hills and the valleys. And so, you know, going back to that source, finding is the love inside of me from God. And then so, one thing, this was a God honest truth, what kind of got me clean was, I didn't want to embarrass my child.
Mm.
She, you know, had started school, and I know kids are ruthless, and so, and you know, I knew I was, you know, people knew me, people knew my dad, and I just didn't want people to tease her.
Yeah.
For, you know, because your mom is a crackhead.
Mm.
And so, I just started really getting it together. I like dibbled and dabbled. And then just, you know, one day I had a night and I woke up like, I'm not doing it no more.
Oh, wow. And so when you look back even in that moment and you realize, you know what, I don't want my child to be made fun of because I know what it's like for children to hurt children, and we're already scarred.
Mm-hmm.
I always say there's a little girl, a little boy in all of us,
mm-hmm.
and however they were nurtured by nature,
mm-hmm.
they will develop
mm-hmm.
that
mm-hmm.
trauma, that outcome, and then they will become the projected focus of what someone else said.
Mm-hmm.
And so it sounds like you had another epiphany,
mm-hmm.
another revelational moment from the Thursday at Having the Courage to Change and love to, you know what, I have a daughter and I don't want as going to school be made fun of. And so in that process, what was the next steps you did to make sure that that didn't happen?
It was a struggle because as soon as my mom, who was taking care of my daughter, as soon as she realized, okay, she's not going to do this no more, and it was maybe like a week, then bam, here comes my baby. Mm. And I'm like, you know, it was a lot because I wasn't even sure. I mean, I still had my crack pipe in my dresser, my side table for 10 days. I kept it for 10 days. Yeah. And so it's the crack pipe in the side table and me and the baby in the bed. And so it was a struggle at the beginning. And I mean, my daughter's 23. And when I think of stuff, I still will text her like, you know, I really want to apologize for this, that, and another. And she'll say, it's okay, Mom. And I'm like, no, it's not. No, it's not. And I'm going to tell you why. And so as I mother myself, I'm, you know, still mothering her. And it was a struggle, but it was just, I just wanted to be, I wanted to be there for her. Okay. I did not want her to think that because I was gone those days, because she made a comment, she was like maybe 5 or 6, and she was like, so why didn't you come and get me? I didn't think you liked me. And I was like, oh my God, I didn't like me. It had nothing to do with you. And so I just, you know, I started just doing everything I could for her. A lot of people thought I was hard on her, too hard on her, but I knew the genes she had in her. I was a recovering addict. Her dad was a recovering addict. So I knew that I needed to, you know, keep my hands and my eyes on her at all times. And, you know, it could be helicopter parent. I don't care what people call it, but it's kind of like God does me.
Okay.
You know, his eye is always on me. There is nothing that concerns me that he doesn't get in the midst of. So I try to be that kind of mother.
Okay.
And it kind of, you know, it's kind of working pretty good.
Yeah. And so what I hear you saying is that that moment in 1998 with your daughter, I just want to pass and just to explain a little bit about passes. Let's talk about that. Some people may understand it, may not. I know that some people like detail. Passes are when you were in the program, there were things you had to do to, in order to get the privilege mm-hmm. of being able to go home for a certain amount of hours over the weekend. Mm-hmm. Because programming is from Monday through Friday from 9 o'clock in the morning till about 9 o'clock at night.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like a 12-hour. It's like a 12-hour job.
Yes.
5 days a week.
Yes.
Because I believe that you have to put as much in it, if not more.
Than you did out there on the streets.
Than you did on the streets. And so you were working towards, in 1998, to get that 10-hour pass. And whatever we would have asked you to do, you was willing to do it. And then we skip up to her being 5 or 6,
mm-hmm.
getting ready to go to school.
Mm-hmm.
And then your mother giving her back in a week and a pipe being in one drawer, baby in the bed, still got to make some real decisions, knowing where her genetic genes are coming from, understanding where you even came from. In this culture that we stand in now, with racism, systemic racism, with sexism, with just social injustice and all of the systems. The Bible talks about it. He says, be in this world, but not of it.
Mm-hmm,
be
mm-hmm.
conformed by the renewing of your, be transformed by the renewing of your mind, but don't get conformed into the world.
Mm-hmm.
And so some of our brokenness created us to get conformed.
Mm-hmm.
And so even with what you experienced from the time your daughter was 1 till she was 5, and the decisions you made and the choices you made, what else was another catalyst to keep you moving forward?
One thing, I mean, because all of this is my daughter. Once she started going to preschool, I just realized how smart she was. I mean, and people didn't believe me. Like 9 months old, she was saying, like, Poppy, Nana, Mama, and you know, she was walking at 9 months. And so I realized, like, you better get it to really get it together because this kid is quick. And, you know, one day she came home the teacher, she had pages and pages. She was like, look at this book I wrote. And I opened up the book and I was like, what book? And she was like, those are words, aren't they? And I was like, no, they're not. And she was like, these aren't words. And I was like, no, well, show me what words are. Okay, we had a chalkboard and she learned how to write that week. And the teacher called me like, you know, this girl can write. And I was like, yeah, why are you letting them scribble? But I just saw that I need to keep up with this child. This child is brilliant. And unless I want her to stumble and fall and bump her head like I did, I gotta stay right with her. And so that was my focus. I read that every kids magazine I could think of, they said that girls, you know, in order to do well in math and science, they needed to play with boys' toys. I went out and got hammers and nails and trucks and cars. And the sister got like a 26 on the ACT. And that's how she got her scholarship to college. So
you really got focused. So you took that same energy from drugs and promiscuous and all the stuff you were enduring for your pain and put it on your passion and your purpose for your daughter. But let's talk about even the journey just for you. Like the things you had to then learn to nurture and parent you. Because even though you have a focus on your daughter, that's a great purpose. And I've learned that. And they can keep us for a while. And yet, if we do not focus on the internal work of ourselves. And I want to talk a little bit, like, give me some history about your parents. And where you come from and where they come from. And what do you think that, do you think that that as well, like could have easily been some of the systemic stuff that you dealt with, and even the emotional abuse and the codependency and like you said, being the only girl. Talk about that.
And honestly, Lucreta, and that's one thing that I realized once I got like 50, when I turned 50 about 3 years ago, I realized I've been taking care of everybody else. I'm not even okay. So in the midst of mothering her and, you know, guiding her and building her to what she, the best she could be, I end up going to college. I end up finishing college. I set a goal. I said, you know, you got to get this before you're 40. If not, shut it down. And, you know, let her do her thing. And I did it, still smoking at 39. I finally graduated at 39. I think I had about 6 or 7 more months to go before I turned 40. And I did it. I think, okay, so my parents are from Hazard, Kentucky, from the Appalachian Mountains. And my mother didn't graduate from high school. My dad had graduated from high school. He had moved up here, stayed with his uncle, got a job.
Moved in Ohio?
Mm-hmm. He moved to Cincinnati. He had an uncle or a brother that lived here. No, it was his uncle. It was my grandmother's brother. But I think that I was raised to put myself last. I think watching my mother take care of, you know, she worked all day. She came home. She had 3 kids. She had a husband. Her mom was down in North Carolina. She kept up with her. And, you know, there was church activities. So I learned early on that I wasn't that important. It was, you know what I'm saying? Everybody else was more important than me.
Yeah. And so as a woman, I think we learned that earlier. And it sounds like even I'm going to connect it back to your daughter. As you begin to focus on your own life, you realize that I gotta now step back, and what am I gonna do for me? And so even at 39, going back to school, and you didn't just go get a degree in something like easy.
No, I had a history degree, I did.
You went and got a history degree.
Honestly, it was kinda like a plan B. I didn't have a clue in college, and then I joined the military, and then, you know, after the military, I did get an associate's degree when I was in Honolulu, because there was kind of like, after work, there was really nothing else to do. So when I got my associate's degree, and like I said, I'm still going to teach. I get back here, and I'm still using drugs, and then I'm starting to commit crimes.
Okay.
My anger is out of control, because I've been mad all my life, and I don't even know how I smoked crack that long because it just did not agree with my mental and my nervous system. It just, it did things for me that it just didn't do for other people. And now I see it was God, because I'm not lying. I would sit in the crack house and be like, why are you letting them sit there and enjoy their high? Why I can't enjoy my high? And I just see God like, you ain't supposed to be doing this. You ain't getting ready to enjoy this. And it was never an enjoyable experience for me, and I don't know why I did it that long.
Yeah.
But once I went back to school, every class I was in, I would raise my hand and ask the question, and they would say, well, that's more of a history question. And I'd be like, okay. And then once I did the research, I found out with my criminal record, I was not getting ready to be a teacher.
Mm.
And so that was devastating.
Wow.
It was devastating.
Yeah.
I mean, I actually had a relapse behind it. But then, you know, me.
Resilient?
Yeah. I'm going back Monday. And I went back Monday. And like I said, I finished out, you know, that quarter. And so here I am.
Yeah. But then in that, it sounds like you learned a lot about your own history and about why you did what you do. Because history says his story.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And it takes you back to roots.
Mm-hmm.
Of how you, you know what I'm saying, worthless. You have to ask questions to me in history like, who am I?
Mm-hmm.
Why did I do that?
Mm-hmm.
Where did that come from?
Mm-hmm.
Why is it here? So it sounds like that maybe that was also connected to your journey, was God wanted you to ask more of those kind of questions to find out about you.
Exactly. And I remember I was having some issues at work. And I was crying every day when I got on my way home from work. And it was like a 45-minute ride. That's a lot of crying. This is every day. So I got home and I Googled, why do I cry every day after work? And bing, you're being sexually harassed. Are you being sexually harassed? And I, am I? And I had to start looking at that. And in looking at that, and I never knew. You talked about this all the time. I would read your books and be like, okay, codependent. Okay, people be codependent. It was my codependency.
Come on.
My need to please. Mm-hmm. Because I had to do that at home to stay off the hot seat.
With your mom or your
dad? My mom. My dad was my ace. That was my ace. Okay. But there was a lot of tension there between she and I. And that was the other part. I was getting it at home, and then I'd come home and it was the same thing at home, and it was the same thing at work. And I was like, I'm not getting any breaks. And so when I turned 50, I went on a cruise by myself.
Mm.
And I mean, I God did a lot. He showed me a lot of stuff out at sea.
Wow.
And when I came back, I lost all my friends.
You said I lost all my friends.
I lost all my friends because, you know, I start standing up.
Okay.
You know that picture I showed you? I start standing up. I start using my voice.
Okay.
Because as much as I talked and fussed and cussed, I still felt like I wasn't expressing myself. I was saying what I thought people wanted me to hear. I was saying, remember I said I was a good rule follower?
Mm-hmm.
Because
you said that in the beginning of this conversation.
And then even in the military, nobody knew I was on drugs because I was a model soldier.
Okay.
And so I realized you do a lot of stuff you don't really want to do.
What was that like to have that revelation?
It made me mad, and I was already mad. It made me mad, and I was already mad. And so I learned, like I said, I probably was born a historian. I learned that in a conversation sometimes, especially in the moment when there's contrast, I've learned, you know, this and this and this, they don't like come out and it's up. But I learned, give me something to write with, and you gonna hear me loud and clear. So I learned maybe your best bet is to write what you need to say.
Okay. So you learn how to express yourself through writing.
Mm-hmm.
And did that help you make your 5-year goal to get you to where you are today?
Yes, that, like I said, I when we came here and I learned vision boards, and I even had a vision notebook. It
yes,
was like
did.
A remember it was
and
a
pictures.
Old well it was
Spark.
From it was from one of them hospitals
yes.
and it was an emergency preparedness kit.
Yeah.
And I was like, okay, I'm gonna leave that part on there. But I put all these
pictures
mm-hmm, and on the inside, and it had the big, it was one of them old school notebooks mm-hmm. and it had the big, and I started, you know, I had a section for spiritual, financial, educational, and recreational mm-hmm. because you got to find something else to do, because those first, that first little bit, I started, I found, okay, I got a little control over this crack a little bit now.
Okay.
So when my daughter would go to sleepovers, ooh, I could get high all night. And that's how I end up stopping, because I went out and I drank, and then I end up getting high all night. And I woke up the next day like, girl, you ain't doing this no more. I think I had about 32, 36 cents in the bank. I had just got paid. I mean, my bills were paid. And I was like, okay, Teresa, there's no such thing as a responsible crackhead. It's not happening. And so it was time to wrap that part up. But
you began to look at your vision boards.
Yes. And I began to make steps. And I started reading. I kind of read it like, and I have it on Audible. Every year I kind of, you know, take a week at work and listen to Napoleon Hill.
Okay.
How to Think and Grow Rich.
Yeah.
And so, you know, what does he say? Something about success is the progressive realization of worthwhile goals, something, something, something.
Okay.
But, and I start realizing, okay, you can, you know what I'm saying? You just got to do those little steps, baby steps. Sometimes I maybe couldn't take a step as big as I wanted to. But then, you know, God starts saying, don't you just work it monthly? Mm. Do what you can do monthly.
Yeah.
And then it was funny because remember when I read you Psalms 1 yesterday?
Yes.
And it talked about bearing fresh fruit every month.
Yes, yes.
And so I start realizing it is very necessary to stay focused on this 5-year plan. And I looked, you know, one time I had read somewhere that said, if your situation were to stay the same for the next 5 years, would you be okay? And my answer was,
no.
H-E double hockey sticks. No. I hated my job. I hated where I was living. I didn't have friends, and I didn't kind of want that many anyway.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? And then I was like, no. No. And so that was my plan.
So it sounds like if we had to describe you in one word, it would be tenacity. It would be resilience. It would be determination. Would you agree with those words?
I would agree. Yeah, tenacious, that's kind of, yeah, with the T. Since Teresa, tenacious Teresa. I remember I had a boss that was a horrible bully. And, I mean, she just stayed on me. And it had gotten so bad that she had written me up. And she had written me up, and her intention was to put it in my official government file, and it would have sat there for 3 years.
Mm-hmm.
And so this move that I'm about to make would have never happened.
Okay.
And I saw that because, like I said, I've got this plan to get out of here. And y'all, how you gonna not like me and try to stop me at the same time?
Okay.
Well, I just kept on. I kept writing. I kept sending people notices, letting people know. And one thing, I mean, and this is a given with you and I, but I said this last night, there's a Joyce Meyer Bible study that I just do it over and over every year. I've probably been doing it probably about 5 years. I've done it 5 times. I just don't even feel like, I don't know, I look for other ones, but this one speaks to me. And I'll never forget, I forgot what the subject was, but the scripture was, meanness gets paid back in meanness.
Mm.
And that's when I start going hard. That tenaciousness set in. And this is not, this is more so a testimony to, you know, kind of like to the glory of God, to yeah. what he can do. And eventually, I just picked up the phone and I called the director and I told her what I had to say and I sent her my email with the whole rundown. And they ended up moving her. They wiped our team out, but gave us all new supervisors. And that kind of set the ball rolling for me too, because I was able to do a different type of work and that gave me more experience. And then when I had this interview, I was able to talk the talk, because the job they had me in was a tad bit like a dead end. Nobody wanted that position. It was like the worst team. But, and that's what I was saying last night to the ladies, never despise their small beginnings.
Yeah. And so when you look at back at all this, and as we begin to wind up this interview, and the purpose that I wanted to do this interview was because, to me, the Bible talks about lepers, and it talks about that he healed 10. And only one came back to thank him. And every now and then, you do this kind of work in recovery, and you work with people. You see them fall, you see them flounder, you see them stumble, you see them cry. I call it joy and pain. And you get a chance to see them excel. I've always, we talked about this last night, Geneva talked about it. We always seen your greatness in you. Amen. We always seen your ability to be more than what you were illustrating in your behaviors in that time. And so when you think about having the courage to change, City Gospel Mission and the recovery program, and as I am looking at expanding this ministry, building a house from the ground up, renovating the current houses we have, when you look at that, if you could say, do you believe the City Gospel Mission addresses brokenness, addresses love, addresses compassion, help people in systemic racism? How would you like just take all of that and put it in a bowl and share to the world what your experience has been in all of those things? The law, the love, the compassion, the process, all of it.
I'll say this first. I used to, you know, I called you guys, you and Geneva, Old Testament and New Testament. And one thing I will say about having the courage to change, the City Gospel Mission, is it's kind of like, this is, I mean, it's Bible-based, because you've got your Old Testament, you've got your laws, you've got your rules, you've got your structure around here. And you all don't let up on that. I hear you a little lenient than you used to be, but hey. And then there's the love. There's the New Testament. There's that you don't have to live by the law, but you got to keep them. You know what I'm saying? And we do, you know, even though we're living a new, you know, in the New Testament.
Mm-hmm. The grace.
We still, you know, try not to lie. We try not to kill other people. Mm-hmm. And you know what I'm saying? We're still keeping those laws. But it's, I mean, this is just like the Bible in flesh. It's like the Bible. If you want to see a video of the Bible, I feel like you should come here.
Wow.
Because you've got all different kind of people. You know, you've got men now, you've got women. I've never come here dead flat broke. I've always, you know, I always had a good job. I've had apartments, I've had cars. But nobody knocked me for having that. You know what I'm saying? And so this is the Bible. This is God. This is who he is. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
You can't go to jail and see this. You can't go to a 12-step meeting and see this. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I do.
You can't go to, I don't want to say names of other organizations, but, you know, halfway houses. This is the only place where you can come and see God in action on a regular basis.
Wow.
And you know how God, we can fall in and out with him. We can fall in and out with you and come right on back. Not to take advantage of you, but that's just how God is.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm going to let her do her thing. She'll be back. If she don't, hey. Oh, here she comes. You know what I'm saying? That's how this place is with us.
Yeah. And that's why I believe that my desire is to, because we're in a culture, this is 2020. You're getting ready to leave and launch to D.C. Mm. with a great job with
Security and Exchange Commission,
which is a GS
11 through 13. Come on. I started as a FAB. I've been a FAB twice.
Yeah.
That's what I say. Do not despise a day of small beginnings.
And so with all of that and your daughter being her third year and straight A student, didn't she, the words you told me last night is that she told her, one of her peers, don't be talking about what you can't do because they said I was a crackhead baby. Come on.
Yeah, she told her friend, look, I'm supposed to be a crack baby, so the sky's the limit.
Exactly. So we talked about Black Lives Matter last night. We talked about all the things that's happening in the culture right now. We talked about you had been sexual harassed, systemic racism in your job. We talked about your recovery. We talked about your internal work you did for yourself, discovering yourself, loving yourself. So, and all that you said just now, which you couldn't have said it better, is that this ministry is the Bible in flesh.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
When you see the culture the way it is today, what encouraging words would you give someone just like you of color, a woman of color? What would you say to them? What would you just say? What would be the message?
You say to women?
To women and to women of color, both.
I suggest to ladies to be your own best friend so that you can be yourself and so that you can be who God called you to be. And not just be your own best friend without God. He's a given in this picture. But be your own best friend. Mother yourself. Your mom wasn't hot. You didn't have the best mom. Mother yourself, sis. You didn't have the best dad. Be your own daddy.
Yeah. Find people in your life that can help those areas that was missing. It sounds like that's what you did. And God began to give you, whether it was through an affirmation, through videos, books, whatever, history. He just began, your daughter, he just began to give you opportunities through other people and through things. And you knew it was God taking you on this journey is what I hear you say.
Mm-hmm.
And then I love what you said last night too. You said one thing that was beautiful. You said, when all the drugs are gone and all the sex is gone, all the emptiness that I used to use to make me feel better, I had to learn to face the pain and still get up every morning, go to work, do my best version of myself, cry if I needed to, laugh when I needed to, and begin to know that I'm going to get through this.
It was the worst.
Yeah.
It was the worst. I think last year was the worst year of my life. Honestly.
And then
2020 comes and then it's a COVID. But, God is like, girl, I work in pandemics. just like I said last night, at first I didn't even get the job. Two people passed
it
up.
Talk about it, yeah.
I applied for the job in January, February, and they were like, 2 weeks later, they were like, oh, not referred, big red. And, okay, fine. And I, moved on. I applied for a job at my job, and worst interview ever. And now I see why. God was like, I want you to get that. I had something else. And January, February. 4 months later, I get an email, SEC. And I was like, what? Interview? And I told my boss, and I'm starting to see that I think I'm going to live my life this way from here on out. He was like, so what are you going to do? I said, it's either practice or I get it. And they called me the next day, and I just, been moving along. But like I said, last year I thought was the worst year of my life, and it was the loneliest. It was one of the loneliest years of my life. So my first time living by myself in 20-some years. Mm-hmm. My daughter was 23 and 22 years. And I thought it was, I didn't think I was going to get, I never thought 2019 was going to end. And then, like I said, we get to 2020 and it was mess at work. And then finally that broke up. And then the COVID happened. And then, you know, everybody was isolated. And I was like, okay, hey, welcome to my world. So, and 2020 is, I just thought about it like, this is the perfect vision year. And this is the year when the five-year plans show up.
Yes.
And so here I am, and I wasn't even going to call you, remember?
Yeah, I know.
But I was looking for a mover. And not that I wasn't call you because it wasn't going to be that long, and mm-hmm. I just, you know. But I was looking for a mover, and the guy answered the phone, and I was like, is Lucretia your mama? And he was like, yeah. And I was like, what? And then I text her. I text you. I just guess who's moving me. And then you was like, blah, blah, blah. And then I start telling you. And then, no. And then I woke up a couple days later, mm-hmm. like, hey, I think I'm going to have to come over that way because I don't want to go backwards.
Yeah. I don't want to go back to, to the toxic relationship with my mom and all those things.
Mm-hmm. I don't want to go backwards. I want to leave here on a clean slate. And this is the safest place I know.
Yeah, I'm so grateful that you decided to be a part of our lives, but I'm really grateful that you decided to let God do exactly what he said, mm-hmm. take the broken pieces and put them back together,
Praise God.
Then launch you. And I feel like this moment has been like a new baptism. He's washing off any residue mm-hmm. that could try to link itself to you as you move forward in your new adventure. And I am so grateful that having the courage to change in City Gospel Mission could be one of the greatest parts for God's way of doing things to help you have the best life ever.
Yes.
And fulfill your five-year vision to be with your daughter, to be in D.C., to be having a job. Girl, who, like you said, you were so shocked with the six figure that you thought they had made a mistake.
Yeah, I had to
and
call
that
them.
For you, like you're saying, from a time in the crack house to God almost sending you to the White House.
Oh, close.
Almost, very close. You'll be working on the same street almost. And that God says, I did it.
Yes, he did.
And I will continue to do it.
So yes,
thank
he did.
You for doing this interview with me and telling your story and encouraging me. Encouraging others.
Thank you. Love, I love you.
You've been listening to the Embracing Change podcast. Music production and mastering by Gone Coastal Productions. Podcast editing and production by Jennifer Osborne. Podcast copyright 2020 by Lucretia Bowman.